ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय इत एतेत्र कुत्रत्या मन माया मोहिते थरे धावन्त एव तत्र ब्दं क्रीदन्तो विष्णुना समन् इत एतेत्र कुत्रत्या मन माया मोहिते ठरे धावन्त एव तत्राब्धं क्रीदन्तो विष्णुना समन् इत एतेत्र कुत्रत्या मन माया मोहिते ठरे धावन्त एव तत्राब्धं क्रीदन्तो विष्णुना समन्
For this reason,
ete,
these boys with their calves,
calves
tatra,
here,
kutratya,
where have they come from?
Mat maya mohita itare.
Different from those who were mystified by my illusory potency.
Tavanta.
The same number of boys.
Eva.
Indeed.
Tatra.
There.
Aabdam.
For 1 year.
Kridanta.
Are playing.
Vishnuna samam.
Along with Krishna.
A similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for 1 whole year, yet they are different from the ones illusioned by my mystic potency. Who are they? Where did they come from?
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Although appearing like calves, cows, and cowherd boys, they were all Vishnu. Actually, they were Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. Brahma was surprised. The original cowherd boys and cows, he thought, are still where I put them last year. So who is it that is now keeping company with Krishna exactly as before? Where have they come from? Brahma was surprised that his mystic power had been neglected. Without touching the original cows and cowherd boys kept by Brahma, Krishna had created another assembly of calves and boys, who were all expansions of Vishnu Tattva. Thus, Brahma's mystic power was superseded.
Om Gyanthimitandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurunilitanjena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Sakadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vithamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Kokesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tatka Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna
A similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for one whole year, yet they are different from the ones illusioned by mystic potency. Who are they? Where did they come from? This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text 42. This chapter is entitled Brahma Stealing the Boys and Calves. As we have discussed, this particular chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is very very intimate, very sacred for all of us, because Srila Prabhupada translated and revealed the ecstasies of his love in these purports during his last weeks with us, during his manifested pastimes in this world. Physically, it's difficult to explain. He was in such a state, he could hardly eat anything. He couldn't sit, he couldn't stand. Devotees would put a little microphone right next to his mouth, and he would, with all his strength, whisper his purports. As Krishna was about to take him to Goloka, he was meditating upon and sharing this pastime with the whole world for all time to come. This chapter was his last contribution of his life mission of giving purports and translation. And what a inconceivable, incredible pastime this is. Lord Brahma, who's speaking today's verse, he came to the realization of the supreme greatness of Vrindavan Dham through this incredible experience. Sanatana Goswami, he tells us that Krishna's unlimited, supreme, attractive qualities bewilder everyone in Vrindavan. Bewilder them in such a way that they see Krishna as their friend, their child, their lover. Sanatana Goswami reveals to us that beyond that, the love of the residents of Vrindavan bewilder Krishna. Krishna's Madan Mohan, which means even the most powerful, deluding, hypnotizing, mystifying force of this creation, Madana, is bewildered by Krishna. We know that story on bank of Yamuna, when Madana, Kamadev, wanted to test Krishna. And with his most powerful of flower arrows, he aimed at Krishna. And we don't have to explain the details of how Madana or Kamadev bewilders people in this world. But when he aimed at Krishna, seeing Krishna's beauty, he became so bewildered that he fell unconscious. But Srimati Radharani, who is the Padini Shakti of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she bewilders even Krishna by the power of her love. And she is Vrindavan Aishwari. She is the queen, the presiding influence in everything in Vrindavan. And the prem, the love of all the devotees in Vrindavan bewilders Krishna. How is he bewildered? He's bewildered in the sense that by his own free will, he becomes dependent on the love of his devotees. Nowhere else except Vrindavan does this this tattva so fully, completely developed. We read in the previous chapter how Aghasura appeared as a gigantic serpent sent by Kamsa. He was so big that when he opened his mouth, his upper lip was touching the clouds and his lower lip was in the ground. His tongue looked like a broad, multi-lane highway. That's quite scary. When you or me see a little snake, we become afraid, yes? It's like a little cobra slithering around. How big is he? How close is his upper lip to the clouds? How wide is his tongue? But when a cobra starts slithering toward you, we become very much afraid. You can imagine Aghasura. What a fearful... I can't imagine anything more fearful. Snakes are one of the most fearful things in this world. They're the symbol of death. A snake of this proportion. And he wasn't just a little jiva snake that, you know, just, you know, is afraid of you. Because snakes, you know, they... usually because they're afraid, they strike you. But Aghasura had the demoniac mentality. He was coming specifically to kill every single resident of Vrindavan. The gopas, the gopis, the calves, the cows, the deers, the peacocks, the birds, everyone. It was his idea, if he kills Krishna and he kills all the gopas, everyone is so attached to them that the parents, the brothers, the sisters, everybody, they will all die. They cannot live. This was a massive terrorist act that he was plotting. And there were so many gopas. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in numbers how many cowherd boys there were that would take out the calves with Krishna. How they all played so nicely in the pasture grounds is Krishna's inconceivable potency. And the little boy saw the big mouth of Agasura open, and they were fearless. They weren't fearless not because they understood that God, Krishna, is going to protect them. They were fearless because their love for Krishna, Krishna's love for them, just there was nothing else to disturb their minds. The only purpose for fear in Vrindavan is to increase people's love for Krishna. It wasn't fear for themselves. So they were saying so many things. This looks like a very beautiful playground for us to play in. And others were saying, it looks like a gigantic snake. And some started running away and saying, you can't run away. And then they all came running back. They said, even if it is a snake, let's go inside. Krishna will protect us. So they were clapping, dancing, smiling into the mouth of Agasura. And Krishna was watching. And they were looking at Krishna like, you know, we're going in the snake. And according to Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami, Krishna was bewildered. Krishna was thinking, they're going into that snake's mouth. He's come to kill them, and he's going right in their mouth. And this is kind of difficult. How do you kill somebody when all your friends are inside of them without hurting them? Yes, and this is a challenge. So how is it Krishna is bewildered in this case? It's not bewildered like anybody is bewildered in this world by Maya. The bewilderment of Yoga Maya, or the Leela Shakti of the Lord, the pastime potency, is Krishna's love for his gopas, Krishna's love for his calves, and their cow mothers, and their mothers, and their fathers. He's actually really worried about them. That bewilderment was only, according to our acharyas, a beautiful ornament of how Krishna is conquered by the love of his devotees. So he went inside Agasura. The serpent's mouth closed, tightly shut. It was complete darkness. There was no air to breathe. And all the gopas went unconscious, and all the calves, they basically died. Very special lila, because in Vrindavan, Krishna, he would kill asuras different than any other avatar. He would always maintain his simple little childlike innocence. Yes, with Putana. You know, Putana grew. Now as Vamanadeva, he grew. When Varahadeva was fighting against Hiranyaksha, he was a very powerful boar. He was using his tusks, fighting with clubs. In Vrindavan, Dwarka Mathura, Krishna used his Sudarshan Chakra, his club, but in Vrindavan he never lifted a weapon. Yes. How did he kill Putana? He just little baby
she was growing. He was just a little baby. He was just with his tiny little infant fingertips, was just squeezing and sucking. That's all. So anybody who saw this was thinking, our little Krishna, he couldn't have been the one who killed Putin. It must have been because we planted banyan trees. And because we dug wells, which is pious activities that Lord Vishnu protected our child. Trinavarta. Whirlwind flies into Vrindavan. It was total darkness in the middle of the day. He created so much dust in everybody's eyes. Nobody could see even an inch from themselves. And while everyone was completely in disarray, Trinavarta lifted Krishna, went higher and higher and higher and higher. This is a powerful asura. Krishna didn't take a club or a Sudarshan chakra. He was only 1 year old at the time. With his tiny little tender arm that Yashoda Mai would massage with oils. And it was so soft and so fragile, so vulnerable to Yashoda Mai and the gopis. He just took that little arm and squeezed Trinavarta's neck. Trinavarta's huge. And then little Krishna, his body, was so, probably only weighed a few pounds. But it, without growing, it assumed a weight like the earth itself. And the asura fell to the ground and all his bones were dislocated. So in this way, Shakatasura, he was a ghostly demon. Krishna, just with his little lotus foot, just cried for the milk of his mother and kicked. Incredible. Well, please understand, Bakasura, Krishna, he always put himself, not always, but he would often put himself in a helpless condition to increase the anxiety of his devotees. The gopas are playing with Krishna, and then this massive bird, Bakasura, with a sharp beak, big as a mountain, swallows Krishna. Krishna's gone. Nobody sees him. He's in the body of this massive demon. You see, when Agasura swallowed Krishna, nobody saw it. Because, you know, the gopas and gopis, the elder ones, they didn't know what was happening. And the gopas, they were unconscious in Aga's body. But Bakasura, all the children, they all saw Krishna be swallowed of him. They were in absolute distress. And Krishna just increased the heat of his body, so it was unbearable, and Bakasura vomited Krishna. Incredible. And then with his massive beak, he tried to stab Krishna to death. And Krishna was just dancing around, and he couldn't get him. And then Krishna, with his own little tiny hands, pulled his beak apart. Bifurcated, Prabhupada said. So in this way, Krishna never used weapons. Krishna never grew in size. He was always little Krishna, just somehow or other, killing these demons with Kaliya. He seemed helpless in Kaliya's coils. He really seemed like he was trapped. And then he just slipped out.
didn't grow in size, just danced. Agasura was one exception, because no one could see what was going on in that snake's mouth. He actually grew in size. It was a unique feature of this Leela. He actually grew in size to completely block any air that could go in or out of his body and suffocated Agasura. And what really bewildered the demigods, you know, they could see, but Krishna didn't mind them seeing because they already had, they didn't have the love of the Brijabasis. There was nothing to interfere with. They didn't see what was going on inside, but they saw from a different perspective. Agasura was promoted to the spiritual world to participate in Krishna's pastimes. His spirit soul burst from his head, was in the sky, and then his mouth opened, and Krishna glanced at all the calves and gopas and brought them back to consciousness. Then they all, he kind of herded all of them out, and they all went outside, and this light was still just hovering in the sky. Then Krishna came out, and it entered Krishna's body. And he was promoted to Vaikuntha, to the spiritual world. Because somehow or other, even though he was so envious, the playfulness of the gopas actually brought him some happiness at the very last moment. He was actually feeling the influence of Krishna's little cowherd boys playing so sweetly. He appreciated it. And the beauty of Krishna, he was able to appreciate it. So seeing this was extremely bewildering for the devas who were watching. But what was even more bewildering is afterward, they were really hungry, because this was quite a it was quite a pastime. Krishna, according to our acharyas, usually just before lunch every day some demon would come for several reasons. Among them, their play was so enjoyable, so intoxicating, it was literally impossible for them to stop playing. And if they didn't stop playing, they couldn't eat prasad. And their mothers prepared prasad, which was full of love and devotion. It was prem prasad. So in order to give some interval in their play, an asura would come. And in the process of the asura, it really, really built up their appetites. It was very exciting. So then when they would take prasad, they would deeply relish the Yashodamai and the other elder gopis' devotion. So on this particular day, they were very enthusiastic about prasad. And Krishna always wanted to give his devotees a nice experience. So he specially selected a place for the prasad. It was on the bank of Yamuna, in a beautiful forest with pastures around it. And Krishna sat down, and all the gopas started going in little lines and circles around him. Krishna said, "Let us take here. This is such a nice place. Smell the fragrance of the lotus flowers blossoming in the river Yamuna. And the sand is so soft and so smooth and so nice. And there's birds singing and peacocks cawing, and there's wonderful bakula trees and kadamba trees and tamal trees all around, and there's parrots and other sweet birds singing, and there's a breeze coming from the river. Let us enjoy this beautiful, beautiful experience of Vrindavan and take our prasad."
They all made different layers of circles around Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami compares Krishna to the world of a lotus flower, and all the gopas to be the petals of that lotus flower. So many petals. They were joking and playing. And Krishna performed a great mystical feat at that time, because each boy was so eager to reciprocate their love with Krishna through joking and talking and just glancing and smiling at one another. And each boy was seeing that Krishna's only looking at me. He's only smiling at me. Each boy was seeing that Krishna's back was towards so many others. And everyone is looking, everyone is just looking at Krishna, and Krishna's only looking at me. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of boys, and they're all thinking like that, and they're in circles around him. Lord Chaitanya performed that same lila. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a story when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into Puri. Actually, he was in Puri when all the devotees from Bengal came from Navadvip, Shantipur, Kulinagram, Kulia, all these places, they came to Puri. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this one year, he met them all at Narendra Sarovar, this beautiful lake where there's a boat festival for Radha Govinda, the Vijay Utsav Murti of Jagannath. Then he took them to Jagannath's temple for kirtan and divided them into various kirtan groups. And they danced and chanted in the temple of Jagannath, and then they circumambulated with kirtan in the temple of Jagannath. And as they were all dancing and all singing, there were seven groups with so many devotees in each group. And every single devotee, they were all in big circles around Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They all were feeling that Lord Chaitanya is only looking at them. Now, this didn't make them materially proud that I'm better than all others. Actually, for a true devotee, when you get mercy, special mercy, it humbles us. We don't think, I'm getting what no one else is getting. I'm better. Rather, that Krishna is so causelessly, inconceivably merciful. He's so great. He's so loving. He's so compassionate that he's giving little me this special mercy. That makes us actually infinitely humbled by Krishna's greatness. We become proud of Krishna, not of ourselves. That is spiritual consciousness. So every devotee was thinking, Lord Chaitanya is only looking at me. His beautiful lotus eyes. Our scriptures tell us Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his face was like a full moon, golden in color. And his lotus eyes expanded practically to his ears. And they were so wide, so beautiful. Srimati Radharani's love is manifesting through his glance. And that glance is, every devotee is thinking, I'm his and he's mine. And the comparison is given. This pastime was the identical pastime of when Krishna was sitting in the bank of Yamuna, and every gopa is thinking, Krishna's only looking at me. or during the Ras Lila. Each gopi is thinking, so many gopis and Krishna's dancing with me. Krishna's a Rasa Bihari. Rasa Bihari means he's supremely the reciprocator of love. In the spiritual world, there are innumerable, countless living beings. And yet, Krishna, every flower, every blade of grass, every calf, every cow, every bird in the trees, every tree, every insect, every gopa, gopi, elder, younger, even the babies, everyone is thinking that Krishna is so personally, uniquely, intimately reciprocating with my love and giving me his love. When we understand the nature of Krishna's love, there's no possibility of envy. Because in this world, Srila Prabhupada explains, jealousy or envy is when somebody has something I don't have. It's intolerable. Whether somebody doesn't have, if I don't have your wealth, or if I don't have your beauty, or if I don't have your fame, or if I don't have your skills, or if I don't have the blessings or the empowerments that you're getting, or the recognition, we become envious. But this envy, it's the epitome of darkness or ignorance, is envy. Krishna Suryasa Mayohaya Andhakar. Darkness cannot exist in the presence of the sun. Krishna is the sun. Maya cannot exist in the presence of Krishna. So if we're actually connected to Krishna, if we're actually experiencing Krishna, how could there possibly be envy? Because we're feeling Krishna's love, and we're feeling our love for Krishna. And we understand how Krishna is intimately, personally dealing with everybody, even in feelings of separation. Especially in feelings of separation. Sometimes we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam when Krishna goes to Mathura, the gopis are saying now he's with the queens of Dwarka, or he's with these beautiful princesses in Mathura. What to speak of? The gopis are hearing that he's getting married to 16,108 wives, and they're with Krishna, and we're here in Vrindavan and separation. Of course, all those 16,108 wives are actually expansions of the gopis. Rupa Goswami describes in the Lita Madhava how the gopis expanded themselves to be Krishna's queens, because Krishna cannot live without the gopis. But still, they're in Vrindavan too. And they're not inconceivable pastimes. They're not envious. Krishna's reciprocating deeper, more personally and intimately with them in separation than he is with the queens of Dwarka. So how could there be envy? Envy's darkness. Envy means we're not connected to Krishna, hardly at all, if anything. Therefore, if we feel envious, we should really feel separation from Krishna. Instead of thinking by trying to resolve this envy by acting in a way that's competitive, that only perpetuates the disease. In that state, there's only one solution.
transcend that disease by feeling Krishna's love, by connecting with Krishna, who's Rasa Bihari, by taking shelter of Krishna, taking shelter of his holy names. And how they were enjoying together, joking, laughing, smiling. And they all took out their prasad. And because they're children, and they're very, very playful, and their playfulness really ultimately is to give pleasure to Krishna. Because Krishna likes when we're happy. In the spiritual world, everyone's happy because it makes Krishna happy to be happy. And when Krishna becomes happy, we become happy. And when we become happy, Krishna becomes more happy. And when Krishna becomes more happy, we become more happy. And we could spend the rest of eternity explaining this with just those two sentences. It's ever-increasing. Ever-increasing happiness is not just some stagnant scientific theory or law. The ever-increasing happiness is the dynamics of the relationship of loving reciprocation. The gopis dress beautiful to make Krishna happy. Everything they do is simply for Krishna's happiness. As in Vrindavan, everything Krishna does is for his devotees' happiness. So just to make each other happy, they started designing all sorts of different plates very quickly, spontaneously. One person put all of his prasad on leaves he collected. Other got one big leaf and put it there. Other people, they were getting flowers. Very artistic. Lotus flower with a big whirl, and they put all their prasad on the whirl of the lotus, and they were eating, and others were getting other kinds of flowers. You look at my flower. Well, look at my plate. Look at my plate. And other people were getting rocks and making plates out of rocks. And they were showing each other the food. Look what I have, look what I have. And then they bite it. It was so nice. They're smiling. Try this. And Krishna said, yes, I want to try it. And take the food out of his friend's mouth and eat it. The story of... They were playing games. One boy, he had a samosa. So secretly, nobody was watching. How a secret when Krishna's watching, everybody's watching. But still, they can do it. Because Vrindavan is Chintamani Dham. When you have no selfish, egoistic desires, then all your desires are fulfilled. That's what Chintamani Dham means. If you have any selfish, egoistic desire, you can't be there. But if you have no desires for anything selfish, then every tree is a kalpa vriksha. You make any wish near a tree, your wish immediately is fulfilled. The soil is Chintamani. If you make any wish near even a single grain of sand, that grain of sand will fulfill every wish you have. The cows, there's unlimited cows in Goloka, Gokula. If you make any wish near a cow, your cow would be fulfilled. I mean, your wish will be fulfilled. But the cow will be fulfilled, fulfilling your wish. So it's Chintamani Dham because everyone simply wants to please Krishna. And everyone wants to please each other because that pleases Krishna when we please each other. So everyone is saying, but if you want to do something secretly, you can do it secretly.
So he emptied out his samosa and filled it with petals from a jasmine flower. How many of you have eaten jasmine flowers? Please raise your hand. How many? We like the smell of jasmine flowers. But you know, I've read this pastime, so I've actually eaten them. I have this tendency to like to experience what Srila Prabhupada explains. I mean, I've, to the extent that I have carefully studied worms and stool. I'm not going to go into any more details. But jasmine flowers smell so fragrant, but they taste very bitter. So this boy is expecting to eat a nice, here, look what my mother made, samosa, eat the samosa. And everybody's watching, oh, he's going to eat the samosa. And he bites in the samosa and it's bitter as anything. And he makes this expression, like, and all the boys start laughing, you ate jasmine flowers, like that. And they're all laughing, and he gets ready, and then he starts laughing. Because, you see, there's nobody hurts each other. Everybody makes each other happy. And then the boy who ate the jasmine flowers, in his incredible, ecstatic happiness, because Krishna's watching, and he's laughing. And if Krishna's laughing, then it doesn't matter what anyone does to me if it makes Krishna happy. Krishna's smiling, ah, you ate jasmine flowers. And to make Krishna even more happy, and to make everyone more happy, the boy who ate the flowers starts punching the boy who gave him the flowers. And the boy who gave him the flowers runs away, and the boy is chasing him to beat him. But everyone's happy. It's just play. There's no enmity. So as they're playing and joking and eating prasad, the devas are watching. Because, you know, they do all these yajnas with official brahminical priests. They chant the mantras, and they do the tantras, and they do the yantras. They perform the mudras and the pujas. And everything is very precise, according to the regulations, according to the shastras. And it's all so that Vishnu, who is Yajna Bhuk, will accept their offering. And here is that Yajna Bhuk, he's eating the food out of the mouth of these cowherd boys. They were bewildered. And Brahma came down because he wanted to see what was happening. He heard about this Akasura Leela. And he saw Krishna, you know, playing, joking, eating the food from the boys' mouths, laughing. So he wanted to, he got bewildered by this. And in his bewilderment, he wanted to reveal his own powers before Krishna. And he wanted to see what Krishna would do and how he would do it. So the calves, while the boys were enjoying so much with each other, the calves were allured farther and farther away by very soft, tender, delicious grass. This is Vrindavan. It's inconceivable to be a blade of grass, because nothing is
dead in Vrindavan. Everything is fully conscious. Satchidananda. So every blade of grass wants to make itself totally delicious for the calves to eat. Yes, and that's their pleasure. For Krishna satisfaction. So the calves are eating the grass and they go farther and farther, and suddenly the boys, they don't see the calves and they become disturbed. Where are the calves? Gopal, as the servant of his friends, he said, "You just carry on enjoying prasad, I will go find the calves." And all alone, it's described when Krishna was sitting with his friends at that time, he had his flute tucked in, a little piece of cloth between his body and this cloth on his right side. And he had a buffalo horn, a little cowherd stick. And in his hand, he was holding a preparation of dahi, yogurt, and rice, and some little pieces of fruit. He was holding that. And he went, kept holding it, to look for the calves. With that preparation in his little tiny hand, he went to the pastures, the forests, the mountains, the caves. He didn't see the calves anywhere. And he came back to the place where his friends were taking prasad, and all his friends were gone. Lord Brahma had taken them all away. And Krishna, he looked like he was just an innocent little child looking for his friends. He understood immediately what Brahma had done. And he used this as an opportunity not only to show his causeless mercy on Brahma, who was kind of proud to do this to Krishna, but he took this as an opportunity to fully satisfy the desires of all the cows and mothers of Vrindavan. And he manifested himself, his amsas, as every single calf and gopa. Identical. The same ornaments, the same clothes, the same accents, the same memories, the same bodily features, the same way they walked, and perfectly the same exact relationships they had with their parents and friends. So here was Krishna in the form of unlimited calves and unlimited cowherd boys. They're all Krishna! And they come back to the village of Vrindavan and they all start playing their horns, their buffalo horns and their flutes to announce that they're coming. And all the parents of all the children and all the cows of all the calves are so eager for their children to come. And when they arrive, the gopas, the gopis, they are embracing their children. They're feeding the children their breast milk. They're so overcome with affection. They massage their children's bodies with oils after they bathe them and put them clothes and feed them. In this way, it was extraordinary. Sukadev Goswami and our acharyas explain, Prabhupada describes so beautifully, that every gopi and every cow, they had motherly love for Krishna. And inconceivably, they loved Krishna more than their own children. And they loved their children. probably millions of times more than anyone in this world could love their children. It's not that they were just detached from their children because they loved Krishna. They loved their children incredibly, their mothers. But they loved Krishna even more than their own children. And without any jealousy or envy, they would see how Yashoda Mai would feed her milk to Gopal. And they were just yearning for them to feed their milk to Gopal. It was their love. To have Krishna, if only Krishna could be my child. And all the cows were thinking that. And Krishna fulfilled all of their desires for one full year. Krishna was drinking the milk of his devotees like nectar. And this was such a reciprocation. It was not only all the gopis and cows' desires to have Krishna as their own personal child, but because of their prema, it was Krishna's desire to have every cow and every gopi as a mother. He wanted to taste. He was thirsting for the love of each and every one of them. And that love was coming through their milk and coming through their motherly love. All the gopis and their husbands too, the gopas, the fathers, they never put, they weren't trying to philosophically understand this. They were beyond all this philosophy stuff. They loved that year their own children as much as they loved Krishna. Something that never happened before. And another thing that was inconceivable, because it wasn't only their own child was Krishna. Everyone's children was Krishna. They loved everyone else's child as much as they loved their own child, and they loved their own child as much as they loved Krishna. And love for Krishna is ever increasing. At every moment, their love was increasing for their child. At every moment, their love was increasing for everyone else's child. Suddenly, they loved every calf. Out of all the millions of calves in the herd of Nandamaraj, they loved every calf as much as they loved their own child, and they loved their own child and every calf as much as they loved Krishna. What a year that was. And when Krishna would take the calves and the gopas out in the pasturing grounds where none of the gopis or cows were even seeing, Krishna would play with all of his friends exactly identical, even nobody was even watching. Krishna would play with all of it. It's not that after they got out of view, they all went like this. Krishna would play with them with the same relationships, and they'd all have the same relationships with each other. Sometimes they'd be hitting each other for giving samosas with jasmine flowers. And it was Krishna hitting another Krishna. They all had the same relationships with each other. They all had the same relationships with Krishna. Krishna had the same relationships with them and the calves, and everybody and the boys are herding the calves. Please come, come, come. And the calf was him, and the cowherd boy was him. Incredible, transcendental pastime. And they were absorbed. On one level, Krishna was playing like an actor in all of these different forms. But another, the acting is based on such prema, such love, that the Lila Shakti or Yoga Maya potency is actually, they're absorbed in the role.
Krishna is absorbed in all these roles.
Now, you know, I'm a Swami, so there's certain limits to my understanding of relationships. But a mother, a loving mother, really deeply knows all the details about a little child. Yes? For that whole year, not a single mother, cow, or gopi even sensed that this is not my child. Krishna so perfectly, so meticulously made himself identical in every way to their children. The only difference was they loved their children unlimitedly more and ever increasing that unlimited. How could something unlimited be ever increasing? That's Vrindavan. It's Achintya. Unlimited love that's ever increasing for the rest of eternity. Now, time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world. That means time as we know it, because in this world, time is destroying everything. In the spiritual world, time is there just to facilitate loving relationships. Krishna goes to the pasture at a certain time, he comes back, but time doesn't diminish anything. Material time diminishes everything. In the spiritual world, time increases everything. Because eternity is beyond time, and everything and everyone is eternal. So this year has passed where all the gopas and all the calves are Krishna himself. They're playing with each other. They're reciprocating with each other's love. They're reciprocating with their parents' love. This pastime was so deep. Krishna, even though he was increasing the love of everyone in such a way that it was unbelievable, he did it with such precision that Balaram didn't even think that there was anything different. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains Krishna didn't reveal it to Balaram, because for 1 year, for Balaram to be without his friends, Sridhama, Subala, Stoka Krishna, he would feel separation. So Balaram was playing with all his friends. He loved them all more than he ever loved them before. But even he, the all-knowing Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, didn't even think to investigate. Until one day, about 5 or 6 days before the year ended, the cows were with the elder gopas on top of Govardhan Hill. And suddenly the cows saw the Krishna calves, with all the Krishna gopas on the bottom of the hill. And the cows became so overwhelmed with motherly affection. They did something they had never done before. Completely out of character. The cows completely abandoned the gopa, the older cowherd man. With no reservations, they were galloping down Govardhan Hill. So that it was like two sets of legs. And their tails were raised straight up. Their udders
were so full with prem, with milk. It was just pouring out of them. And they were mooing very loudly.
The cowherd men were really ashamed and distressed by this. You know, galloping down the hills, they could break their legs, and what to speak of, you know, all their milk, they're just going into the ground, and they're going to their calves. They totally lost control of what they were supposed to do. So they were very upset, and they were chasing after the cows. And then they saw something that was really out of ordinary. Because all these cows had given birth to new calves. These were the older calves. The older calves don't drink the milk from their mothers. That milk is reserved for their new calves. Every one of those cows had a new calf. And they went to the older calves. Because you see, the new calves weren't Krishna. They went to their older calves and started giving them the milk. And the older calves were all Krishna. They were drinking the milk. Krishna was conquered. He was becoming totally intoxicated, tasting the prem of the cows in the form of that milk, in the form of these calves. He was drinking and drinking and drinking, intoxicated, and the mothers just having Krishna accept their love. Without even knowing it was Krishna, they were so intoxicated. Tears were forming in their eyes, and with their tongues, they were just licking and licking and licking and licking their little calves like they were practically like they were going to eat them. They were just licking them. And the gopas saw this. They became really disturbed. What's happening here? But then when they saw their little gopa, their little Krishna Gopa sons, their love in their hearts was transformed just like the cows. Now you see, men, somehow or other, due to our destiny, we cannot give milk. Most of us probably can't even appreciate what it means to do that. But, you know, we read about Yashoda, and we read about the cows, and we read about the gopis giving the love of their prem in the form of milk. And Krishna's just sucking it and drinking it, accepting it, and we're just giving more, and he's drinking more, and both just such an intoxication. But males can't do that. But their love was just like the cows, just like the gopis over that year. The cowherd men saw their little children were so deeply, deeply, emotionally, spiritually overwhelmed by their prem. And they expressed it by smelling the heads of their children. It's kind of like the male equivalent to giving milk. I guess. Something like that. And, you know, usually it doesn't talk so much about this details of smelling the head of children. But according to the philosophy of prem, we can understand that the same principle is there. When they're smelling the head of Krishna in their little children, can you imagine how Krishna is making his head smell so nice? See? Even the Shankha is kind of laughing at all this. But Krishna's reciprocating. He's Rasaraj. So Krishna, they're smelling him with love. They're offering Krishna their love by smelling his head. And Krishna's manifesting such a beautiful smell in their
and they're smelling. It's an offering. So that the fragrance is ever increasing. Their enthusiasm to smell it is increasing. And in this way, unbelievable. The cowherd men were stunned, embracing their little children, and became completely peaceful, completely satisfied. We can understand through this too, when we're actually absorbed in Krishna. Vajahure mana srinanda nandana abhaya charanara vindare. When our mind is absorbed in worshipping Krishna, we become fearless. We become free from all anxieties. Param drishtva nivartate, the higher taste. By experiencing Krishna, they were completely transformed. And as they were going back on the hill with the cows, they were weeping and crying in ecstasy, just absorbed in love for their children. Balaram was watching. Balaram has seen everything, but he's never seen this, at least on one level. Balaram has seen Krishna killing all these asuras. He's seeing all the loving relationships with Krishna and gopis and gopas in so many ways. But how the cows were so affectionate to their older calves, and how the cowherd men were so affectionate to their children, it was just like their love for Krishna. This leela is so incredible. Not only did it bewilder Brahma, not only did it bewilder all the Brijabasis, but it bewildered Balaram. And he was wondering, how is this possible? The gopis love everyone as much as their own children, and they love their own children as much as Krishna. Such all-pervading love on such a level. And then he understood, and Krishna explained. As far as I've understood, this leela began on Balaram's appearance day. Because Balaram wasn't there when all the calves were stolen. He was home getting abhishekams and giving charity to Brahmins and all the things that Yashoda and Rohini would do to get blessings for Krishna and Balaram on their birthdays. It's interesting because most of these birthdays, they're giving. Yes? Our birthdays, usually children, they expect to get something. Presents, gifts, like that. But you read it, usually they were, Yashoda, Rohini were getting them to give to Brahmins and to give. Because they understood, the parents, that the most precious thing that they could get is blessings. And blessings come reciprocally. When we serve, then naturally we are blessed. So 1 year later, Brahma comes. It's only one moment by his calculation. You know, he couldn't come too much sooner because one moment. One moment is a year. And he wanted to see just how he, by his supreme potency within this universe, what effect he had on Krishna and all his friends in Vrindavan. And when he came down, he saw all the calves, all the gopas, playing exactly as he saw them a year before. He couldn't believe this. As we're reading in today's verse,
what he did is he took all the gopas and the calves and put them into a mystic sleep. And then, in some sort of cave, he laid them there by his own mystical powers.
What kind of a yogi is Brahma?
You know, today you go to Kumbh Mela, you see yogis, you know, they go underground and put a straw. Have you seen that? They're disciples. Very faithful disciples. They dig a hole and then they bury their guru completely. So he's totally underground and there's just a straw. And he's underground and there's just one little straw coming out of the ground and he's breathing through the straw. We have seen these things. And you know, you're just, and it's underground, so you're just walking and you just see a straw coming out of the ground. You don't realize that there's a yogi down there. Right? And the, you know, I guess his disciples have to watch carefully. Some little child is playing around. Oh, a nice straw. Or, you know, sometimes at Kumbh Mela, the cows are pretty hungry and they just see a straw and just eat the straw. And the yogi's down there. Ah. Well, you know, how many of us could do that? How many of us want to do that? They have great powers. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to Kumbh Mela in 1971, January, he told devotees that some yogis, they, from the high peaks of Himalayas, they go into Ganga and they chant a mantra. They go underwater in the Ganga, chant a mantra, and they come up at Prayag at the Triveni in a matter of seconds. It's not that they like swim, you know, 500 miles. They just... Yogis are very powerful. They can read each other's minds. They can create objects. And in Siddhaloka is a place, a higher planet of where all these people have all the eight mystic cities in immense proportions. Nothing like here. If somebody has even a little fraction of one city, they could be worshipped as God here. Siddhaloka, everybody has all these eight mystic cities. They don't make a big thing about it. Because everyone knows how to do it. But Brahmaloka, Lord Brahma, he lives 311 trillion years. No demons ever go to Brahmaloka. It's really a nice life from a material perspective. And what a yogi he is. He happens to be materially the father of every living entity within this universe. And the Vedas come from his mouth. He's seeing so much. Brahma is the most elevated, the most powerful, the oldest of all living beings in the universe. So you can imagine his mystic potencies. He's helped to create all the planets. He's helped to create every species of life. What have we done in comparison? And he came to this little cowherd village of Vrindavan, and there he saw that all the children look exactly the same. He went to the cave and saw they were still sleeping there. Then he went to Vrindavan. And he was just looking. And then he saw that they're all playing, exact replicas. And he was really becoming confused. He was thinking, are these the original ones, and are these identical ones, or are these the real ones, are these identical ones? And it may be when I look this way, Krishna's putting everyone in the cave, and then when I look this way, Krishna's taking them out of the cave and playing with them. What's happening? He was really becoming bewildered. And what was even more bewildering is behind the scenes, he didn't even steal the gopas and the calves. Our acharyas tell us, just like Ravana stole a Maya Sita, Vedavati. Similarly, when Bhama came to steal the calves and the gopas, Krishna, through his Leela Shakti, Krishna actually hid the originals himself, personally. Yogamaya did, and created Maya, calves, and gopas. And Brahma stole them. So Brahma stored them in one place, the Maya gopas and calves. Yogamaya stored the real ones in another place, and Krishna manifested himself as all of them. And they didn't have like any sort of, you know, managerial strategic meaning of how to do this. You know, this would take pretty serious organization, wouldn't it? Just happened in a second. That's Vrindavan. The ultimate strategic planning. And Brahma was so bewildered by this because he couldn't figure out, how is this possible? They're here, they're there. He forgot who he was. And when he was at the peak, at the crescendo of being completely bewildered, his ego being totally deflated by confusion, then Krishna wanted to do something even more. Suddenly, Brahma sees every one of those little calves and every one of those little gopas transform into Narayan Vishnu. Each one had a beautiful bluish complexion with a golden helmet. Each one had the Kaustubamani and Shri, the golden line of Lakshmi's presence on his chest, Srivatsa. Suddenly before him, there was unlimited Vishnus. And every Vishnu was smiling at him. Now Brahma, you know, when he does some yajna on Satyaloka, one Vishnu comes and smiles on him. But now there's millions of Vishnus smiling on him. Can you imagine, like, a whole herd of Vishnus as far as the eyes can see in all directions? And Krishna wanted to increase even that. Around every Vishnu was the demigods. Not like around all the Vishnus. Around each Vishnu was Shiva and different demigods and sages and rishis and all worshiping and singing hymns. And when Brahma saw that, he became completely blank. He actually went unconscious. I don't remember it saying that he fell down. He was just, that's even a more serious unconscious when you can't even fall down. He forgot who he was. He forgot where he was. He forgot what he was doing. He forgot it. He was just totally overwhelmed by Krishna's powers. He just stood there, blank. And then, somehow or other, he came back to consciousness. But that blank was so special. We can give you know, whole classes about that blank. Because what was that blank? That blank mean it was like a short circuit. You know how when you have a fuse and there's just such an overload, it just goes and then everything goes dark. That's kind of what happened to Brahma. The load of seeing Krishna's opulence and Krishna's mystical potencies and Krishna's, just, he didn't know it. He just, he went totally blank. Total darkness. Nothing. That means all his misconceptions, all of his ego, everything finished. He was completely purified, overpowered by Krishna's unlimited sweetness. And then when he opened his eyes, for the first time, he could see Vrindavan. He couldn't see Vrindavan. He was seeing but not seeing. As long as he thought he was Brahma, he couldn't see Vrindavan. As long as he thinking that I'm the father of everybody and I'm the creator of this universe, he couldn't see Vrindavan. But when he totally blanked out and there was nothing. But that blanking was not like some mode of ignorance thing that we go through. By Krishna's inconceivable grace, he gave up all of his misconceptions, his upadis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, Naham vipra nacha narapatir napi vaishya na shudra. I'm not a Brahman or a Kshatriya, Vaishya or a Sudra, not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanapras, Sannyas. I'm none of these things. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasanudasa. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Brahma came to that realization. I'm not Brahma. I'm not anything of this world. Krishna just eliminated all of those upadis, all of these artificial temporary designations. And when that was gone, he actually saw Vrindavan. When we go to Vrindavan, what do we see? To the degree we want to be the enjoyer, to the degree we want to be the controller, to the degree we have any conceptions that I'm better than somebody else, or I'm worse than somebody else, or all of these material designations and attachments and attractions and aversions, then we only see the external covering of Vrindavan, the Maya covering of Vrindavan. Trinadapi sunichena, taror iva sihishnana, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Krishna's not different than his name. Radharani is not different than her name. When we have no false ego, when we're humble like a blade of grass, forgiving, tolerant like a tree, we don't expect respect from others, but we're happy to give, then we could taste the sweetness of the holy name. The name reveals herself to us, himself to us. And similarly, Vrindavan, Yegatamam Prapatyande, according to our ego, we see something else. But when by Krishna's grace, it cannot happen otherwise. It's not by our how many slokas or scriptures we learn or how great we can speak them. It's not by how sweet we could sing kirtan with our trained voices. It's not how good we could manage yatras. It's not how good we can dance. It's not by the incredible temples we may build there. We can only see Vrindavan by Krishna's grace. And what is that grace? The same grace he gave to Brahma. He takes away our ego completely. We become materially blanked out. And then are actually receptive to see Vrindavan as he is. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. We can only see Krishna and Vrindavan when our eyes are in its truth, in its reality, in its depth. When our eyes are anointed with the salve of prema, of love. And that love is given. It cannot be attained. It cannot be achieved. Srila Prabhupada writes in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that pure devotional service, prema bhakti, is most rare. Because it conquers Krishna. Krishna doesn't give it easy. But Krishna gives it easy for one who is sincere, serious, and has no ulterior motives. That's the secret of bhakti. To have no ulterior motives. Krishna's pleasure. So when Brahma blanked out, everything was kind of taken away, and then he opened his eyes, and he was seeing the same place as he saw before, but he saw it as something totally different. The same trees he saw before, now he's seeing that they are all kalpa brikshas. They're wish-fulfilling trees. They're eternally intimate associates of Krishna, fulfilling everyone's desires. He was seeing every speck of dust as more precious than all the jewels, what to speak of Brahmaloka, even Vaikuntha. He was seeing the cows and the calves as Sarabis, Kamadhenus, wish-fulfilling calves and cows. As he was looking around and seeing the beauty of Vrindavan, Brahma's thinking that the beauty, the sweetness, the love, the spiritual opulence of these trees and these calves and these cows and these simple little gopis and gopas are infinitely more beautiful, more pleasing than everything in Satyaloka. And beyond this material universe where the highest planetary system is Satyaloka, beyond that is Maheshtham. Nothing like that compares. And beyond Maheshtham is Haridham, the abode of Vishnu, Vaikuntha. And all the royal, regal, inconceivable spiritual opulences of Vaikuntha cannot even compare to what I'm seeing today. Vrindavan. He was so intoxicated. He was thinking. And Shukadev Goswami explains how he was totally insignificant. The example is given that in the pitch darkness, the darkness of snow has no relevance. And in the light, a firefly has no relevance. When it's a moonless night, fireflies really look special because they give out so much light. A couple years ago, I was at one farm community, Gita Nagari, in America. And I was staying at one God brother and God sister's home. And I went out. It was a moonless night. This is actually when I was in the service of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami during his last days. They don't have a brahmachari ashram there, so I was staying at a God brother's home. And I was coming back one night, and it was a moonless night, and there were all these fireflies. In America, they call them lightning bugs. And it was just so incredible. I was watching. I was thinking, this is so mystical. This is so beautiful. How they're just giving so much light. And there were thousands and thousands of them going. And I was just watching. And I was sitting there for a long time just watching, thinking, what a miracle of God that these little, they just give light. And it's like a light, like better than fireworks. And then my God brother, he comes and he says, do you know why they're doing that? And I said, it's just so beautiful. It's Krishna's miracle. He said, those are the male bugs trying to attract the female ones. I said, why did you have to tell me that? I was really like getting enlightened by all this. Why did you have to tell me that? No, you know, I'm a Swami. I'm not even allowed to look at this anymore. And he said, you asked. I said, I didn't ask, you asked. He said, would you like to know? He said, but you said yes. So I went inside. And I lay in my little room and I just looked up at the light bulb. And I was thinking when I was looking up at the light bulb, you know, there's no danger in looking at the I don't think there's any female light bulbs around. So when the firefly is giving its light, he's thinking, I am illuminating all directions. But when the sun rises at noon, then that same firefly, with all his strength, with all his voltage and wattage and whatever he may have, he's struggling and straining to light up this. But he's insignificant. Nobody even notices. That was the realization of Lord Brahma. In the darkness of ignorance, I'm thinking, I'm so great. I'm so significant. But in the presence of Krishna, I realize I am totally insignificant.
Now, from a material perspective, if you go to a psychiatrist, and he says, so please tell me about you, your life, and you say, I am totally insignificant. Probably give you some injection to make you feel significant. Because that could be pretty depressing from a material perspective, that I am totally insignificant. But that wasn't Brahma's realization. That's not bhakti. To the degree we realize we are insignificant, to that degree we can actually open our eyes and our hearts to cherish and relish Krishna's supreme significance. Then our happiness is not about what I can do. Our happiness is about what Krishna can do. What Srimati Radharani can do. Our happiness is, we can do something good in this world, and we can tell everyone about it, and some people will appreciate you, and some people couldn't care less about you, and some people will envy you, and eventually, you know, we don't do that anymore. it doesn't come out that way anymore. That's the way the world is. But when we realize that our insignificance, then we take our pleasure in what Krishna does. And then when we hear these beautiful pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, that's where our happiness is. Krishna lifted that Govardhan Hill with the tip of his little finger of his left hand for 7 days and 7 nights as Indra was showering massive, massive torrential storms and winds, and Krishna was smiling. As long as we have, to the degree we have false ego and a desire to enjoy independent of Krishna, we can appreciate the pastimes, but it's limited. It's stifled by our own desire to enjoy. But to the degree we realize Krishna's all great, then our full desire for satisfaction is fully fulfilled by Krishna. Look what Krishna does. That's the nature of love. Just like a mother or a father, if they really love their child, it gives them so much happiness to see what their child accomplishes. My own father, he's 88 years old now. And, you know, when you're 88 years old, you can't do all that many things that, you know, he used to be a businessman, he was accomplishing and doing so many things, but now he can't do that much. But since he's coming to India, he loves devotees so much, and he has such affection for Krishna, that anything I do, he just becomes, his happiness is what I do. When you love someone, then you find the greatest happiness in what that person does. And that even on the material level. When we love Krishna, when even a glimpse, a fraction, a little lightning bug blink of that love awakens in our heart, then we just love what Krishna does. I mean, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, when Mukunda Dutt was singing that prayer of Uddhav, oh, who else but Krishna can I give my heart and my love to? He gave the demoness Putana
the liberation of his own mother in a spiritual world. When Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard this, he went into total ecstasy and forgot himself. That's the nature of love. The little baby Krishna is sitting on a banyan tree leaf, sucking on his toe. Now you go and tell, somebody on the street that, my God is laying on a banyan tree leaf as a little baby sucking on his toe. They'll think. They won't understand. But because once you have a drop of love of Krishna awakening in your heart, when you hear about this, oh, Krishna, you're so wonderful, you're sucking on your toe. So fantastic. And, you could... Unlimited philosophy, unlimited theology can spring from that one pastime. Because of love. So now, Brahma, he's seeing Vrindavan. And after he sees Vrindavan like this, all of a sudden, all the Vishnu forms and all the forms of Vishnu's devotees disappear. And there is just Krishna, all alone, looking really confused, searching for his friends. He's just like looking here, looking there. He's just a little cowherd boy, and he still has the same yogurt and rice and fruit in his hand. Now that's inconceivable. Krishna's Navayovanam Chai, he's ever fresh. 1 year, the yogurt is still sweet. The fruit is not shriveled up or anything, because it's in Krishna's hands. Whatever's in contact with Krishna is immortalized. It's not affected by time. Brahma, even though he has such a long life, still he's seeing everything in reference to time when he's doing his work as a creator. When he saw the little boy Krishna, just so innocent, so naive looking, so just like an ordinary little child. It's not like all of a sudden he became Narasingha Dev and Brahma, why did you steal my friends? Other avatars do that. He was just looking around, walking, and Brahma realized who is Krishna. The ultimate sweetness, the ultimate power of God is what is manifested in Vrindavan and Sri Vrindavan Chandra Krishna. Assuming such a common demeanor, but possessing supreme potencies. Brahma realized there, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, that even all these Vishnus are partial manifestations, expansions of this little cowherd boy holding the lump of yogurt and rice in his hand. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Brahma realized that Krishna, that this Govinda is the supreme ultimate source of everything that exists, the original person and the supreme object of all love. Brahma
Rama got down from his swan carrier and fell in full dandavats at the feet of this little cowherd boy. And they were all alone. There was nobody else around. Because now the scene was just like after he stole everyone and Krishna was searching. And Brahma surrendered. And the amazing thing is this little gopa, he actually paid no attention to Brahma. This is very instructive. Now, if Brahma came to your house you would probably greet him very nicely. Yes. I mean, if the prime minister or the president or the captain of the cricket team, whoever you may think is great, if they come to your house, you know, this is a very special personality. Well, Brahma is how great he is. But for Krishna, Brahma had no relevance whatever. Krishna doesn't care about your post. He doesn't care about your influence. He only cares about your love. And Brahma loves Krishna. But compared to the Brijavasis, he was insignificant. Krishna was looking for his calves in this particular aspect of the Leela. Krishna's looking for his calves. And when Brahma came, any single calf is infinitely more significant than this Brahma. Every gopa. And by ignoring Brahma, Krishna was revealing to the world the love of Vrindavan. How it can't be nothing of this world of its highest caliber could compare to the love of Vrindavan. Even when Lakshmi from Vaikuntha came to Srivan or Balvan, Krishna neglected her because even her love could not compare to the residence of Vrindavan. This is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us. The love of Vrindavan. This is what Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas came to give us. Entrance into that abode that Brahma had realized. And he offered these beautiful prayers to Krishna. It doesn't even say that Krishna looked at him. He was offering incredible prayers to Krishna. They are here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in his prayers, Brahma prays, he prays for any to take birth in any position, in any species, anywhere, even as a little blade of grass, even as a little creeper in the ground, any birth in Vrindavan, so that Krishna and all these devotees who love Krishna so much and who Krishna loves so much, any one of them, I want them to step on my head. I want the dust of their feet as my supreme worshipable object on top of my head. The person with the highest position in all the universe is praying to be a little piece of grass in Vrindavan. He became the four hills of Barsana, four heads.
so that all the devotees of Sri Radhika and Krishna can step on his head. Ultimate aspiration. And after this leela, Brahma performs tapasya. And because he knew that Lord Chaitanya would be coming, Krishna, in the spirit of Sri Radha, to spread prema through prema sankirtan. And when the Lord appeared before Brahma, Brahma said, I don't want this. This post makes me mixed up. It's hard to be absorbed in all this seva I'm doing for you and not get, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the service, but I keep getting bewildered. I get implicated in this all. I just want a position, the lowliest, simplest position where I could constantly chant your holy names. Brahma wanted to be a little, any little place in Vrindavan, a hill, a piece of grass, a grain of soil, so that the devotees would step on his head. And here, that ultimate realization was given to him. Lord Chaitanya gave him the blessing that you will be Haridas Thakur. From Brahma, you will be born in an untouchable family. Brahma is born of Vishnu's navel. He has no mother. That's a pretty prestigious birth. Somebody says, well, who is your father, mother? At the very before creation, I was born from a lotus flower sprouting from the navel of Lord Narayan. It's very, and now he's praying to become an untouchable, where people will persecute him, people will misunderstand him, people will blaspheme him, people will chastise him. And in that state, with all humility, he could constantly chant the holy name. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, Narottam Das Thakur.